Good evening. So, last week I began talking about the four foundations of mindfulness, the teachings of the Satipatthana Sutta, one of the sutras of the Pali Canon. Early texts, teachings of the Buddha, or early, some of the first recorded teachings written down, supposedly, and one of the most, probably one of the most important meditation manuals in Buddhism. This sutta instructs us in awareness of different aspects of our subjective experiences in these. It's four different aspects or foundations, which is our body, our feelings, our mind, and dharmas, which is specific mental qualities or sort of an application of certain Buddhist frameworks towards one's experience. Talk about how mindfulness asks us to focus on the sort of the process of awareness itself rather than the content, which is when we're not mindful, we tend to get absorbed in our own thoughts. So mindfulness isn't about trying to change one's experience in any way, but rather to become aware of it and to deepen it. It's this kind of non-interfering awareness, abstaining from amplifying or proliferating, suppressing our experiences, which we typically do. Much of our less mindful life, we create narratives around I, me, mine, and an experience gets either proliferated or suppressed based on the stories that we try to tell ourselves and convince ourselves and kind of constructing our I around them. We get further away from what the actual experience is. And so mindfulness challenges us to just simply allow our reactions to unfold before our watchful stance, and abstaining from identifying with that which is being observed, so that any aspect of our subjective experience can be regarded as a mere phenomenon, not to be attached and clung to. Also mentioned last week, and I'll go into this a little more tonight, but that in the Noble Eightfold Path, that mindfulness is in the among the training of concentration, and it's between right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration, and so we need a certain effort to establish mindfulness. So when we notice that we've gotten distracted and bring our awareness back to our breath and body, that's like this, that's the effort, is that kind of direction. We need some of that for establishing mindfulness, and establishing mindfulness also leads to concentration, which helps to settle the mind and also supports mindfulness. So these two are, concentration and mindfulness are related but a little different, and they are mutually supportive of one another. And I think the difference is that concentration helps to sort of, it enhances certain functions of their mind. It's kind of a narrow focus. So for the concentrating, turning our awareness specifically to, our abdomen and the breathing, and just below the navel, like that, we're kind of focusing on, our awareness here. There's a concentration there. And mindfulness is a way of kind of expanding our breath of attention. So it's a much larger focus. It's like, setting a in a lens of a camera, like if you want to focus on that very specific detail or get the bigger picture. and whether we turn our attention to the more dominant details in our experience or to the sort of entire field of experience. So there's a certain interplay here. In Soto Zen, the kind of ideal of meditation is that of Shikantaza, in the school of Dogen, with just sitting, or objectless meditation, which is really this radical mindfulness in some way, of being mindful of whatever arises as one's consciousness. And I think, as anyone who's tried this knows, it's hard to do this, to just be aware of everything, right? It's like, where do you start? There's not no sort of no guardrails or any sort of trellis to support our practice on there. And unless we really have built up some concentration, it's quite hard to notice actually whether we're being mindful or not, or mindful or mindless are not so far apart when you're trying. You're just being aware of everything, including your thoughts and your daydreams, all of that. It'd be pretty helpful to start with some focus and some kind of anchor. And the breath and the body are excellent ones because they're right here and right now, right? So what concentration does in focusing our attention is that it brings a kind of a penetrating quality by getting closer to a particular aspect of our experience, the sort of our common subject-object duality that we tend to view our experiences through, kind of fades, and there's more of a experience of unity. Just being with, less of I breathe and more just breathing, and even that sort of concept, we don't need to engage it so much. We can just get closer to the experience, and less of a self there. And that is calming, because whether we realize it or not, we keep ourselves, our minds, pretty busy with these stories about I, me, mine, right? And when we don't engage in those so much, there can be a certain joy arising as well. The concentration is, and the Buddha discovered this, is insufficient for awakening. Because it excludes the broader circumstances, broader awareness of our circumstances, and relationships. In the story of the Buddha's awakening, he went and studied with these masters in the jhanas, these concentrated states, and he mastered these himself. And he learned that by doing that, he was no more awakened afterwards, his experience of the world hadn't really changed, because it was a retreat, a respite from the world. So it could be a soothing place to go, but on their own, it actually didn't making him any wiser. Didn't come to realize anything. So for that, concentration needs to be combined with mindfulness. And it's really because of mindfulness that any aspects of our life can be an opportunity to just wake up to things as they are. And so I wanted to talk tonight about mindfulness of the body, but really we're just starting with mindfulness of breathing, which is fundamental in our Zen practice. And the section from the sutta I'll read it here because he's Buddha. Teaching was given to a group of monks. It's all written in the male pronoun. It says, and how, monks, does he in regard to the body abide contemplating the body? Here, gone to the forest, or to the root of a tree, or to an empty hut, he sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, and established mindfulness in front of him. Mindful he breathes in, mindful he breathes out. Breathing in long, he knows, I breathe in long. Breathing out long, he knows, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he knows, I breathe in short. Breathing out short, he knows, I breathe out short. He trains thus, I should breathe in, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus, I should breathe out, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus, I should breathe in, calming the bodily formation. And he trains thus, I should breathe out, calming the bodily formation. Just as a skilled turner or his apprentice, when making a long turn, knows, I make a long turn, or when making a short turn, knows, I make a short turn, so too. Breathing in long, he knows, I breathe in long, so forth. He goes on and says, in this way, in regard to the body, he abides contemplating the body internally, contemplating the body externally, abides contemplating the body both internally and externally. I'll get into this later, I think. It's a refrain that gets repeated over and over again. So, anyway, in reading, you know, it starts with mindfulness of the body, and then it goes on to these different aspects of our bodily experiences and through feelings and mind and dharmas, and it's, you can see the languages, and most Pali Sutta are quite dry in some way, and to some extent this also, you know, it kind of lends itself to a sort of a steps and stages. You do first this practice, and then this one, and this one, and then this one, and that's how it's sometimes been applied. And it's also not necessary. I think any of these practices are insufficient. You know, you can just do mindfulness of the body mostly, and that is sufficient. And in doing so, we, once our mind settles on our breathing and our body, we tend to become more aware of other aspects of our experience as well. Mind and feelings and so forth. I was thinking about when I was traveling and living for nearly a year in India and Thailand, certain folks who were backpacking, who, you know, really kind of into their lonely planets and really sort of following and you know, going each place and seeing what there was and which was the right hostel to stay in and so forth, and what were the sights to see. And I was kind of anti that because I felt sort of reductionistic. Is that the word? Anyway, simplistic, and like you get too attached to the map and don't appreciate the territory, and I really made an effort to not, like, know as little as possible about some of the places I left, and I realized after some time that sometimes it's helpful to have that little bit of a map. Actually, I remember finding in Thailand, where there wasn't much vegetarian food, finding this excellent vegetarian restaurant run by this monastery, which was a delightful experience I wouldn't have discovered otherwise. Arriving in a Calcutta, 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was really helpful to know where I might find housing. But anyway, I think there's an aspect of Zen practice where, Zen teachings, where Zen has grown out of the perfection of wisdom, the Prajnaparamita literature, and the kind of anti, let's not cling to the teachings. Right? These get systematized in the centuries after the Buddha. And then the Prajnaparamita comes as a sort of reaction of, like, let's, these are just teachings, fingers pointing at the moon. Right? Let's not cling to them. And they're good, can be really good maps to have if we would, don't get too attached to them. And so I'm appreciated reading this text and the commentaries as a helpful map, because a lot of the Zen teachings are much more poetic and a little confusing. And when you read the sort of the drier, analytical stuff like this first, some of those start to make more sense as well, I think is the point I want to make. Anyway, related to the breath, it's an excellent meditation object for so many reasons. I mentioned last week how it's kind of counterintuitive that it's, the quality of being intimate with one's experience without trying to alter it. It's like that would be liberating, just to be with what is, not trying to change our experience. And when we practice mindfulness of breathing, we can begin to know that this is actually true. By observing our breath just as it is, without trying to control it, if we're mindful and observing it, it changes. It tends to just settle and become a little calmer, a little smoother, just by our attention. Nothing more than that. Just a few minutes of mindful breathing can be enough, or even at times perhaps if just a few breaths, almost. So once we see this, we can begin to relax. And there's some sense that it's okay, I don't need to do anything. That may arise often enough to give us some trust in this practice and come back. We can relax because we're becoming aware of how transformation can occur without us trying to fix anything. I think this is the sort of effortless effort to speak about in Zen sometimes. And again, mindfulness, kind of in the Noble Eightfold Path, is kind of placed after right effort, which is helps us establish mindfulness. And I also think maybe a lot of us are more prone to engage effort than we are to engage mindfulness. It's like, I just got to try harder. I can't be mindful. I just got to try harder. So we want to make ourselves better people and to fix ourselves and control ourselves. And so there is this effort that's necessary. And it's can be the, we want it to be the foundation for effortlessness, for mindfulness. So while effort is this kind of discipline and a certain push by directing our awareness, mindfulness really asks us to bring forth qualities of curiosity about our experience and a lack of judgment. And it's like the discipline is that of not controlling. Also, as we're being mindful of our breath, we get to study impermanence, the ever-changing nature of the breath right there. And we get to study Buddhist teaching on no self as well, that through our breath, our inner world is interacting with the outer world as we inhale and exhale. This is the reason why we're masking right now, right? We breathe, a part of us is released into space and may or will become part of you. And Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Sisigaru Roshi says, this is the second chapter. When we practice Zazen, our mind always follows our breathing. When we inhale, the air comes into the inner world. When we exhale, the air goes out to the outer world. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is limitless. We say, quote, inner world, or quote, outer world, but actually, there's just one world. In this limitless world, our throat is like a swinging door. The air comes in and goes out, like someone passing through a swinging door. If you think, I breathe, the I is extra. What we call I is just a swinging door which moves when we inhale and when we exhale. It just moves. That is all. When your mind is pure and calm enough to follow this movement, there is nothing. No I, no world, no mind, nor body. Just a swinging door. Another aspect that of our reality that our breath can help us discover is the non-duality of mind and body. As our breath begins to settle and our body is still, the mind may begin to settle as well. Thich Nhat Hanh in his commentary says, when body and mind are one, the wounds in our hearts, minds, and bodies begin to heal. So, in this description of mindfulness of breathing, as I read it, it just starts with being mindful of that we're inhaling and when we're exhaling. Just that is all. We may practice counting the breath and finding that helpful. And it's, you know, it's a way of just being aware of you know, when we're inhaling and when we're exhaling. Whether we're counting on the inhalation or exhalation, that's just, we're aware of what we're doing. It's a very simple practice. Whenever the mind has wandered off, just come back to one, start over again, and just keep doing that. Letting go of any judgment for when we notice how quickly the mind wanders off, just come back to one. And then, in case you get all the way to 10, just start over at one. And then the instructions move on to the being aware of the length of the breath. And so in order to be aware of the length of the breath, we need to be aware of the entire breath, just to stay with that whole experience. So it's a certain refinement sort. And then it moves on to being aware of the whole body, the bodily formation, I think is the language. So we can begin to explore this sort of breath, body, mind connection there. I have found it helpful and recommend people that if you're there's a part of your body that always begins to hurt, you know, during a period of zazen, or if you're sitting in longer, like a half day sitting or something, and you notice a certain point in the period that your knee starts to hurt or something like that, and it seems reasonable that might happen again the next period, it can be really beneficial, I think, to really expand our awareness from just breathing at our abdomen or what our focus is to really include our bodily sensations as well, as kind of before we might expect that that knee starts to hurt. Because I think when any part of our body begins to hurt, it's asking for some attention to some extent. So to like see what might ideally with a child be attentive and mindful with them before they get really cranky. So too, that's like we might want to relate to our body in that way as well. If we know how to predict it. And that may see if that may change our experience too. And then the next one is this, like, lots of calming the bodily formations. So I think in Zen we don't. I think it's just. I find especially on the exhalation is an excellent opportunity to just let go of any tension in our body that we may be aware of, to just let go of that little extra, whether it's in our body or in our mind, but just to this while we're making an effort and sitting still and focusing and so forth, to also just allow for calm, not like we're trying to get there, but just sort of being aware of our breath and body and the opportunity for calm to arise. Thich Nhat Hanh says, when peace is established in one of the three elements of, breath, body, and mind, the other two will soon have peace also. And it's interesting because I didn't bring the book, but the two examples he gives is like when the body is at peace, then the breath and the mind will follow. When the breath is at peace, then the body and the mind will follow. He doesn't say when the mind is at peace, the breath and the body will follow. I think it's kind of hard to start with just putting our mind at peace. We don't have much, as we meditate, we don't have much control over our mind. But we do have a little more influence of what we do with our body. By just trying to have, be mindful, bring our mind into the here and now, into the body, it can begin to settle with the breath and the body. Have a little more influence in this way. By sitting still physically, the mind can begin to settle as well. And then some. I'll talk more about this in the following talks, but so once we begin to establish some mindfulness of the body, then it can help to be us be more aware of other aspects of our experience as well, and to create a little more space and less identification with the thoughts going through our head, and to bring our curiosity to that aspect of our experience as well. As most of the time we're so identified with our thinking that we don't even notice, that very hard to have that kind of perspective to study them objectively. It's a little easier to do that with the body and the breathing, and it's hard enough as it is. So those were my thoughts for tonight. Thank you very much.